You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. No Max Scherzer, no Tyler McGill, no Jacob deGrom, no problem. This Mets team continues to find a way to win series, and they did it again this weekend, beating the Colorado Rockies at Coors, which is not easy to do. On today's show, in the first segment, I'm going to recap that series. But then in the second segment, I want to talk about whether the Mets need to go into the trade market to pick up another starting pitcher. I'll go through some of the options that could be available to them, but I'm also going to make the argument for why the Mets should just stay in-house here. I believe there's enough pitching still on this roster to make it through till Tyler McGill comes back from his biceps tendonitis. So we'll talk about that a little bit, then close out the show with a series preview of what lies ahead against the San Francisco Giants, and also talk about Chris Bassitt's new contract. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. You can also find some of my writing at JustBaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Now, the Mets' first game got snowed out this weekend, so they made it up as part of a doubleheader on Saturday. The Mets have fared very well in doubleheaders this year, and that was the case again as they were able to take at least one of those two games. And with Trevor Williams starting the nightcap, I think it went about as planned. Carlos Carrasco was given four runs of support early in game one, Brandon Nimmo with the leadoff hit, and then Starling Marte returned off the bereavement list, and the first pitch he saw, he hits a home run. It was one of those special moments that I know it can happen in any sport, but it feels like it happens more often in baseball, where I don't know if you want to call it the baseball gods or what you want to say about it, but a ball can just kind of be carried out. And that's what it felt like when Marte, you know, sees that first pitch since his grandmother passed away, his grandmother who, you know, helped raise them, and he was so close with her. So you know he's just going through a horrible time right now. And for him to have that moment, I think it was another good kind of rallying cry for this team as they continue to build winning habits, but build winning habits where they're playing for each other. So the Mets weren't going to lose that game after he hit that home run. That's honestly the way I felt. They end up scoring two more on the following inning as Patrick Mazika had an RBI double. Mazika, by the way, 867 OPS, a Mets catcher who's hitting 15 at bat. So an extremely small sample size. He's only played in five games, but this year, the Mets have only gotten eight extra base hits from the catcher position, and three of them have come from Mazika. So that is really interesting. On tomorrow's show, at some point this week, I will talk about whether the Mets should maybe trade for a catcher. Right now, Mazika's playing well enough that they don't have to, and that's kind of the spot that they're in across the board. As long as you're winning games, you're just going to stay internal and let this team just chug along. And you know, Carlos Carrasco is going to be a huge part of helping them get through this rough stretch of the season when, you know, the starting rotation is depleted and he's suddenly the number two starter. And he did the job. You know, he worked around traffic in each of the first four innings. Didn't have a clean inning until the fifth, but did not give up a run through those first five. Did give up two of the seven hits that he allowed on the day in this sixth inning. And Adam Ottavino had to come on to try to bail him out of a jam. He was able to strand one of the inherited runners, but the other came around to score, so Carrasco gives up a run in five and a third. But the Mets bullpen was great from there. Ottavino got through that sixth. Drew Smith pitched a perfect seventh. Seth Lugo came on and got the final six outs, striking out three batters and allowing just one hit. And the Mets were able to cruise to an eventual 5-1 victory with Francisco Lindor adding a late RBI hit in that game as well. Now, game two, not much to talk about. Mets get blown out. Trevor Williams wasn't great, but he wasn't awful either. I mean, he gave up only three hits. He did hit a batter. All of the base runners came around to score because he gave up two-run homers, but that's at Coors Field. It's not an awful start. It's not a great start. I'm not saying, hey, great to see him go out and give up four runs and two home runs. But considering the circumstances where he was pitching, this transition into the starting rotation is new to him this year. It's a role he's very familiar with in the past, you know, over 110 MLB starts. But I think that I would not overreact to this start and just pull him from the rotation simply because of that. It is interesting, though, that Adonis, I'm going to nail the pronunciation this time, guys. Ready? Medina. Adonis Medina. And a funny story that will probably only get one or two listeners to laugh, but I'm telling this one from my brother-in-law, Brad. I'm pretty sure that where I've struggled from this is my brother-in-law, my sister, they live right outside of a town called Medina. And so I think I've just continuously been calling him Adonis Medina because of that. And you know what? Medina got the job done up to this point when I didn't know his name. I know his name. And guess what happens? Gives up five runs. Chase Nasrecki gave up two in a seven-run inning for the Rockies. And that basically was the ball game. So he got knocked around pretty good in this one. And that set up a rubber match on Sunday. And Taijuan Walker did the job. And I'm going to talk about Walker a little bit more in the next segment as we kind of look at the macro lens of this rotation right now. You know, where they might need to add, but you know, he was strong, you know, seven scoreless. You put a good defense behind him. I think that's key. I want to see this infield of Guillorme, Lindor, and McNeil get more playing time together with Guillorme replacing Escobar at third. Escobar struggling right now offensively. He's still going to get his playing time. He's still going to start a couple of games a week at third base. He'll probably still start more there than Guillorme because the Mets we'll play McNeil in left, and then they'll get Guillorme some time at second, and Guillorme will get some time off, and they're just going to continue to mix and match. But I do love that infield alignment. If you can do that right now in particular, where you have these contact pitchers on the mound, it just makes so much sense to me. And we saw Guillorme's value at third base over Escobar in this game. Made a great play where he sort of cut off a ball, didn't let it get to Lindor, made a spinorama throw. It's a type of play where if it was Eduardo Escobar, you would have wanted to let that ball go and have Lindor make the play. But for Guillorme, you wanted to get to everything because he's going to make strong throws. He's just a good ball player. And then the real one that I wanted to talk about was in the seventh, right? Brian Servin? Yeah, Brian Servin ends up ripping one at Guillorme. 95 miles per hour off the bat. He fields it on a backhanded short hop. That is really hard to do. To field any ball backhand, it's always difficult, but one that was on a rope and you catch it off that short hop from the liner that was coming in at 95 miles per hour, it takes incredibly soft hands to be able to make that play and actually keep the ball in your glove and then make a strong throw on top of it. So, I mean, Guillorme just made a hell of a play on that ball. It kind of shows what he can do there. And you look at the expected batting average on that ball, 520. So over half the time, that's going to be a hit. But when you have a Guillorme at third base, you can steal hits. And also, just because Guillorme is a topic of discussion, I think, for everyone now. Everyone's suddenly on this bandwagon. Guillorme should play every day. And I love to see it. But also, it's kind of like when you knew about that hot restaurant that no one else really knew about just yet, the new spot. And then people start going there and suddenly it's crowded. And it's a little bit frustrating where it's like, oh, it's great for the restaurant, but I was the one that you know, knew about it first. That's a little bit of what I feel right now inside. I don't know what that says about me, but I'm just being honest. You know, I did a podcast. I went through the archive to just get a date. I'm like, I know I've done Guillorme Everyday podcast at some point. And I found one October 2nd, 2020. Podcast was titled Louis Guillorme's Case for an Everyday Role. And that was after the 2020 season. So I've been on it for a while and you're seeing him right now. I mean, 7-for-11 since I talked about him on Thursday's podcast and did a segment on it. He's hitting 395 in May with a 439 on base, 526 slugging. He's gotten on base in each of the 12 games that he's played in May where he's gotten a plate appearance and he's got a hit in 10 of them. Also has four multi-hit games, including two in the last three that he has played. So Guillorme continues to earn playing time from Buck Showalter. And this was just another series that showed us that. Now, in this game on Sunday, the Mets scored thanks to the combination of Brandon Nimmo, Francisco Lindor, Jeff McNeil, and Pete Alonso. It's really great to see that quartet continue to come through day in and day out as they were all here last year, right? But now they're performing at a much better level, particularly McNeil, and having the health of Nimmo really does move the needle for this team. Nimmo ends up getting the rally going in the sixth by hitting a single, and then Randall Grichuk made a bad play on the ball that allowed Nimmo to get all the way around to third. Francisco Lindor got a base hit to drive in Nimmo. Jeff McNeil had a bloop double that put two runners in scoring position for Pete. He made contact, put the ball in play to score another run, and that was all the Mets needed. So a 2-0 victory for this Mets team. They've now won 14 consecutive games following a loss. So, I mean, that's why you're winning so many series. They just never lose two in a row. And I know, I mean, knock on wood, but really impressive. We're going to talk about Walker a little bit more in the next segment here, because like I said, he really did carry the day. Outside of him, you had Adam Ottavino come on in the eighth. He walked a couple. Joely Rodriguez helped him get out of that inning. And Edwin Diaz picked up his 10th save of the season, striking out two in a scoreless ninth inning. But should the Mets address that starting rotation through the trade market? I will talk about that in just a minute. But first, I want to tell you about my love of brownies, and particularly brownie batter. So look, if you ever make it brownies, of course, you want to scoop out every last drop of that delicious batter in the pan. But can you imagine if instead of all of the calories and sugar that you'd be eating that way, you can have that same experience, but in a protein bar? That's exactly what you can get with the brownie batter Built Bar Puffs. These are amazing. Like all of the puffs, it's the first ever protein-infused marshmallow. It comes covered in 100% real chocolate. There's only 140 calories, 17 grams of protein, and only 7 grams of sugar in the brownie batter puffs, which are just the perfect pick, whether you want them for breakfast, for dessert at the end of the day, a snack after a workout. All Built Bar puffs, again, come covered in the 100% real chocolate. And that means that with Built, you can eat healthy and actually enjoy doing it. They're also made with a collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. The brownie batter puffs will have you completely forgetting that you are eating a protein bar. No need to pinch yourself. This is a real offer for you. So go to built.com, get the brownie batter puffs, and use our promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your order. Again, that's promo code LOCK15 or 15% off at built.com. Looking at the Mets starting rotation after Max Scherzer's injury, we've sort of had an understanding that David Peterson was going to get called up from AAA. He will start on Monday. Trevor Williams would go from the swingman role into the rotation, at least in the short term. They're going to have Thomas Zabucki make a start this week. So that's another young pitcher who's only had one MLB appearance. If he has a great start, maybe you see him stay in the rotation and Williams get slotted back into that swingman role. But obviously, when you're talking about a rotation that went from, you know, potentially a Jacob deGrom, Max Scherzer, Chris Bassitt trio to now Chris Bassitt, Carlos Carrasco, and Taijuan Walker atop the rotation, it leaves something to be desired. But the question is, should the Mets make a trade right now, or can they get by? And Taijuan Walker does a great job in this start, making you think that they can get through this rough stretch and find a way to keep their head above water. He's been good this year, and I don't know if I can entirely count on it, because I remember what happened last year, and the problem with Taijuan Walker is his fastball, it's very easy to hit. It's not a great pitch. Now, used properly up in the zone, hitting his spots, mixing it with that great splitter, it can work for him, and that was why he was an all-star in the first half last year, but he also gave up 14 home runs on the fastball last year. So the thing that concerns you is, when is the home run ball going to come back and haunt Taijuan? But if he can keep the ball in the yard like he did against the Rockies in that thin altitude, then he's going to be okay for you. And so far this year, he's made 6 starts. First start, strikes out 4 and 2 innings, was looking dominant. Then he gets hurt with that shoulder injury, gets pulled, ends up coming off the IL. He faces the Phillies again. Goes 5 scoreless, didn't get a bunch of strikeouts, pitched to a lot of contact, but it worked for him. Then the third time out, he had to face the Phillies again. And that is actually something that I didn't remember until I was looking through his season before the show today. That does excuse that bad start a little bit, because he gave up 7 runs, 6 of them earned in his third start of the season. But you were facing the same lineup for the third time on the year. So they might have picked up some things against them. And, you know, Walker might have to face the Phillies again this season. So we'll see how ultimately this all plays out for him. But that's the one start you look at where he gave up the nine hits and all those runs where he really looked bad. He also gave up the two home runs. Other than that, he's been keeping the ball in the yard and doing a pretty good job. You know, after that one bad start, he pitched seven scoreless versus the Nationals, which you could say it's the Nationals, but also that's been a good lineup this year. So that's a solid outing. He gave up three over five innings against St. Louis. And then this start today with the seven scoreless against the Rockies. So I think Taijuan Walker as a three is okay. I look at Carlos Carrasco and what he's done this year. And I mean, look, he's allowed two runs or less in six of his eight starts. He has a 3.50 ERA. I've talked in the past about his numbers in Cleveland and how if you really measure from 2014 through 2020 and you look at XFIP, which is expected fielding independent pitching, this is like a top five starter in baseball. It's crazy. I'm not saying he's going to be that, but he's definitely very underrated. And you can get by with these three guys at the top of your rotation, assuming you're getting the best version of a David Peterson behind them. Peterson remains the X factor here. If you get the 2021 version of David Peterson, the Mets might be in trouble and they might have to make a move. But right now, he's pitching to a 1.19 ERA, got a very tough start coming up against the Giants, who handle left-handed pitching really well. But if he makes it through that, I feel pretty confident in your top four, and most teams don't have a good fifth starter. So the idea that you have to make a move, I think that's a little bit rust, especially when this Mets team, you know, continues to add to their division lead each and every day. You know, Tyler McGill is actually playing catch. So I think at this point, a June return should be expected. If there's not a setback, I imagine you'll see Tyler McGill in June and potentially in the first half of June. So with that said, that would be your new starting five or your five-man rotation. And I think that would be, you know, more than suitable until you get Scherzer or DeGrom back. Other than that, you know, the Trevor Williams, you know, element of this, obviously you might want to make a move, but the question is how great are the upgrades you're going to get over a Trevor Williams? You could go right now. I think Carlos Martinez is still a free agent. Mike Foltynewicz is still a free agent. You can sign those guys, throw them in AAA. Throw the ball well, maybe it is better than Williams, but you know, I don't know. And I would do either of those moves, honestly. If you can find a major leaguer that's still in free agency, sign him and see what happens. Throw him in Syracuse. But other than that, here are some names that I pulled up. You got Jose Quintana, a 2.43 ERA, eight starts this year. You've got Martin Perez, a 1.64 ERA and eight starts. He just pitched a complete game, I believe, on Saturday night. Wade Miley, three starts, 3.38 ERA, just got his season going recently. Last year, he pitched to a 3.37 ERA. This is all lefties up to this point. You got Zach Greinke, 3.48 ERA and eight starts, 18 strikeouts only, though, in 44 innings for the Royals. I also think that homecoming is something that I believe that franchise was really happy with. So I don't imagine Greinke gets moved. I think they like him as a leader, but just a name to throw out there. Then you have Zach Davies for the Diamondbacks, 4.35 ERA and eight starts, 30 strikeouts and 39 and a third. Look at all those guys, and Quintana and Perez are the two that jump out because they're off the great starts this season. But if you're negotiating a Quintana trade right now, the Pirates have you over a barrel. I mean, they have all the leverage, all of the leverage. They know you're desperate. They know you need starters. They know their guy is pitching and really exceeding what anyone could have expected for him coming into the year, because Quintana hasn't been good the last couple of years. They're at a point where they can say, look, at the deadline, we're going to get something for this guy. They're going to get whatever they got for Tyler Anderson last year. They can find some value for him at the deadline. So any trade made now for a guy like Quintana, Perez, Miley, even Davies, you're going to pay more now than you're going to pay at the deadline. And do you really want to trade prospect capital to maybe marginally improve your rotation? I don't know, because I really don't see a role for Quintana once you get healthy. Now, that's a big if, but even a Tyler McGill comes in, I don't really think Quintana is that much better than David Peterson. I really don't. I know he has more experience, but I also know that he got knocked around a lot the last couple of years. So he looks good right now pitching in that division where who knows how many starts he's had against the Reds. You know, but it's to me, it does not make sense to panic. Now, if the Mets lose three series in a row, Trevor Williams gets rocked, David Peterson can't hang, Thomas Abucky looks awful, and Taijuan Walker can't make it out of the third inning or something like that, it just all blows up in your face. Yeah, maybe it's time to make a move. But when it comes to the top of the market, the Frankie Montases and Luis Castillo and Tyler Molly, like, those are trades that it's going to require a big prospect capital in return. And I think that the Mets are a team, in my opinion, that is going to make maybe one or two trades this year. And I'd be very careful with which deals you actually make. And I just don't think that the rotation, even with all the injuries, is their biggest need. I think we've learned this year that the Mets had more depth in their rotation than maybe anywhere else on this roster. Now, that depth has been exposed because of the injuries to DeGrom, Scherzer, and McGill. But with McGill potentially on the mend, it's just not something I would address right now. It's really not. I think that you ride this thing out, and there's other trades I would make first, and I'll talk about them this week. I'm assuming that Wilson Contreras' hamstring injury, which right now they're saying is day-to-day, is not significant. That's more a deal I like. Getting a catcher that improves a position that you absolutely needed, just as far as the offensive production you were getting from James McCann and Tomas Nito, the Mets could get by with that because they're both good defensively. But Contreras, you would be solving a problem in that McCann's out right now, but also solving an issue that would exist even when McCann comes back. Not to mention, he raced against left-handed pitching, and the Mets are really struggling against lefties this year. So that's the trade I'm more interested in. We're going to do a show about that later this week, though. I also now, though, want to preview what lies ahead. But for our podcast audience, first, a word from our sponsors. Getting to this series against the Giants. The Giants are a good team, but as of now, it looks like they're about to lose to the Padres and get swept. As I'm recording this, it's 10-1 in the seventh. If they do lose that game, that would push them to 22-18 this year. So they're not quite the same team they were last year where they won, 109 games. San Francisco is still very good, though, and the Mets took three out of four against them last time, so I imagine they would want some revenge. Another thing to look at coming into this series that makes me pause in predicting a Mets series victory is that the Giants have a 714 team OPS against lefties this year. That's 11th best in baseball. But here is the stat that is even more concerning. 57 RBIs against left-handed pitching. That's the third best mark from any team in baseball. So they handle lefties well. And the Mets are most likely, assuming Sapucki does get that start, it hasn't been announced, but it's been hinted for Wednesday's game, they're going to face Peterson and Sapucki. So really a lot of pressure on Peterson to get this series off on the right foot going against Alex Cobb. Cobb has a 5.61 ERA in the season. He did not make it out of the fifth inning against the Mets the last time these two teams faced each other. He gave up four runs, three of them earned, and was knocked out in that fifth. His last time out, he gave up seven runs against the Rockies. So even though he has that 5.61 ERA, it's a little bit misleading because it was inflated pretty significantly from that last start. Prior to that, it was a 3.98 ERA. Now you go to game two of this series, Chris Bassitt versus Logan Webb. And Bassitt, we got to talk about a little bit more at the end of the show today because he just agreed to a new contract with the Mets. But when it comes to this start this week, this is the must-win game of the series. You need Chris Bassitt to get this one. And Chris Bassitt, now the ace of this team, he has to be, when you go through skids, the stopper, but also the igniter when you're in a series. That's the game you circle and say, all right, we got our horse on the mound. We're winning tonight. And you look at what he's done this season, a 2.77 ERA. He has 49 strikeouts. His worst start of the year actually came against the Giants where he gave up five runs, but he still pitched through six in that game. And this year, that's the best thing that Bassitt has done. He's found a way to give them length almost every time out. He's pitched in the sixth inning in every start, going at least 5 2/3 every single time. And he's completed the sixth in all but two of his starts, or two of his eight starts, I should say. So continues to give the Mets that quality veteran starting pitching that they desperately need, particularly right now. He's going to be going up against a young guy in Logan Webb, who was great last year, but it's had an uneven start to this season, a 3.54 ERA. When he faced the Mets, he got knocked out early as well in the fourth inning, giving up three runs in that start. Now, in the final game of the series, it will likely be Thomas Zabucki on the mound against Jacob Junis. That is a good sign there in Junis pitching for the Giants. This is a guy they were using an opener for at the beginning of the year. He has a 4.32 ERA, a right-handed pitcher the Mets should be able to handle. Meanwhile, Zabucki has a 2.86 ERA in AAA. I talked about him last week. I saw him in person, didn't like what I saw, to be completely honest with you, but he does have a good curveball. And he's a guy that always had a lot of promise. Maybe he puts it together. I just remember his start last year was ugly, and it continued to get uglier as it went on. It seemed like just mentally he sort of shattered a little bit in that outing. And then I saw flashes of that in Syracuse. I mean, the game I went to, he got out of some jams with some really good defensive plays made behind him on some missiles. I mean, there was like two missiles that were hit that ended up turning into double plays that helped him kind of get by. So I'm not overly confident in Zabucki, but we'll see what he does. I'm obviously rooting for him. And I think that what you really are hoping for, though, is that'll be a game where the Mets might be looking to sweep a series and you might already have it in hand, because if it just comes down to Zabucki to win the series, it might be a loss for the Mets. But if it is, look, it would only be their second series loss of the season. Now, I want to close the show today talking about Chris Bassitt's new deal. This isn't anything crazy significant. You hear that there's a mutual option for next season and it might get you excited, but there's, a 90% chance that option does not get exercised. It's almost the equivalent of extending a qualifying offer at this point. Just a way to potentially keep him around. Maybe he decides, you know what, I'll pitch on a $19 million option next year, and that would be great for the Mets. But more likely than not, he's the way he's pitching, he's earning himself a lot more money, and he's going to want a long-term deal, as he's already he's 33 already. So I imagine he's going to be looking like for a four-year deal where he can really get that one bag. But it's still good that the Mets avoided arbitration. He was filing at $9 million, the Mets at $8.3 million. They come to terms in the middle at $8.65 million, plus he gets $150,000 buyout on that $19 million mutual option, which really means that he's getting $8.8 million for 2022. That's what he's getting. He's getting a guaranteed $8.8 million from the Mets. Bassitt said that he didn't want to go to trial. He said that he likes everyone here, and it was more so, I think, that we really have a good relationship, and why even remotely try to mess with that is what he said. As far as a long-term deal with the Mets, Bassitt said, quote, "A lot of people are short-term thinking this year now. We have such a special group that I don't really want to be a distraction and hurt that in any way. So if something does happen, I'm really happy about that. I love it here. I love everyone here so far. I would love to do something long-term, but I'm so focused on this year and what this team needs right now that it's hard to think about 2023 and 2024. So we'll see what happens. I imagine they're going to let this thing play out. You had the luxury with Steve Cohen's money that you could sign him at the end of the season. I don't think they have to rush this. Now you have that mutual option, which could be exercised, but more likely than not, he'll be a free agent and the Mets can negotiate. Then I will say that Bassitt has been an absolute revelation for this team. Way cooler than I ever thought he was in Oakland. Got a lot more swag to him and has the swag that he can carry the rotation, I think, for at least the month of June until you could hopefully get one of your other horses back in the middle of July with DeGrom or Scherzer. Anyway, that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, hosted by Paul Francis Sullivan. Locked On MLB is where you want to go to stay up to date with everything going on in Major League Baseball. You can follow Locked On MLB wherever you get podcasts.